Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 166. I'm Rob Wright, security news director at TechTarget, and I am here, the security news writer, Alex Calafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How have you been?
I've been okay. I have these moments now, like we've gotten so deep into COVID that I will take out the trash, like outside, and I will take the long way to the front door just so I can feel being outside for a minute.
Yep.
That's how I'm doing. How are you, Rob?
Great. Had a nice snow day this week, which is, you know, the past year, nearly a year, has been sort of one long snow day for most folks. So yeah, it's going. Mm-hmm. Not too much to complain about, I guess, all things considered. It's been a few weeks since we have gotten on the podcast to discuss some of the things, some of the latest goings on in InfoSec, and we are going to be talking about the dark web, Alex.
The Marianas web.
Yes, the deep dark web.
Everything you know about the internet.
Yes,
it's deep like an iceberg.
You spent a few weeks working on a very long, very in-depth article about the dark web in 2021. That article went live earlier this week. It's a really interesting sort of examination of just a slice of what goes on there in terms of InfoSec threats and what type of activity is on there and what some of the experts out there say really goes on the dark web. I thought it was a great story.
Thanks.
We are going to get into that in just a moment, but you know, we can't do a podcast these days without getting into the latest SolarWinds update, the latest chapter in the SolarWinds of winter, one might say. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's unfair because we get a lot of SolarWinds updates pretty frequently, and we haven't gotten a new Game of Thrones book in quite a while. That's not fair, Rob.
But he wrote hundreds of pages last year, Rob.
I you know what? I am going to stop criticizing my man, George Martin. He can take as long as he wants to write it. I mean, this isn't like it's Half-Life 3, right? Or Half-Life 2, Episode 3, or whatever.
Actually, it is that, because he goes to work on spinoffs before the thing you actually want.
All right. Well, okay, fair criticism. But yeah, so a couple SolarWinds updates, but the biggest of which just happened yesterday. It's worth noting because the company came out with its latest, update around their investigation into the matter. And it contained a couple of interesting items. The first of which is that the attackers behind the breach got into the SolarWinds network, the company's network. It seems like it's prior to October or September 2019, which is what they said. You wrote that story about the SolarWinds timeline. I think it was last month they had said that based on the latest information, they believe the threat actors, the suspected Russian nation-state hackers, had gotten into the company's network and gotten into the, most importantly, the Orion platform development environment, had gotten in there between September and October of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're saying that that the threat actors got in prior to that. They got into the Office 365 environment within SolarWinds, that they compromised an account, an email account, and that, quote, it was used programmatically to access accounts of targeted SolarWinds personnel in business and technical roles. By compromising credentials of SolarWinds employees, the threat actors were able to gain access to and exploit our Orion development environment, end quote. Now, the real interesting part of this isn't that the attackers got in prior to
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm hearing... It sounds like the ocean.
Oh, how am I now?
Better.
I didn't touch anything. When did that start?
10 seconds ago.
Okay. So before the end quote part?
I would just do that end piece again.
Yeah, I'll start over. So SolarWinds said that in their statement, they said, quote, we've confirmed that a SolarWinds email account was compromised and used to programmatically access accounts of targeted SolarWinds personnel in business and technical roles. By compromising credentials of SolarWinds employees, the threat actors were able to gain access to and exploit our Orion development environment, end quote. So this update is interesting, not just because we learned that the attackers got in before the previous update, that they had gotten into the SolarWinds environment earlier than September 2019. That's not all that surprising. But what is surprising is how they got in. It's not clear that SolarWinds knows. So they haven't said that this was the result of a phishing attack, although the portion of that statement about the one SolarWinds email account being compromised suggests that could be a possibility. But they also said this part of the statement was really interesting to me, Alex. They said, quote, while we've confirmed suspicious activity related to our Office 365 environment, our investigation has not identified a specific vulnerability in Office 365 that would have allowed the threat actor to enter our environment through Office 365, end quote.
So that means one of two things, right? Yeah, that means right. Either there's a really big problem with Microsoft, which I actually am doubting based on how the story played out, or it did not start with Office 365, right? Those are the three possibilities, the two possibilities.
Well, the possibility, I mean, what I sort of thought was the most likely, you know, based on my first reading of this, the most likely explanation for what has happened here was that the one SolarWinds email account that they reference here that was compromised and then used programmatically to access other accounts, that account, whoever it was, that person fell victim to a phishing attack and got pwned and lost control of their email account. Didn't have two-factor, whatever, you know, who knows. Rather than, you know, a vulnerability, a zero-day, a previously undisclosed flaw in Office 365 or Microsoft software that allowed these threat actors to sort of waltz in and gain control of that account. But I suppose it's possible it could be that the latter. It seems weird that SolarWinds would mention a specific vulnerability. I mean, they're saying that they didn't find one, but like, why would you even say that you didn't find one if you didn't think there was one at play, right?
There was at least doubt, right?
Or yeah, suspicion, I guess, that may,
or consideration, have... research, whatever you want to say.
Yeah. So it's weird. It seems like they consider Microsoft the actual Office 365, you know, software, product, code, whatever, to be a potential source for this, mm-hmm. this breach, the initial sort of intrusion into SolarWinds, which is interesting. And I don't think they would be saying that if they didn't have something that was giving them strong suspicion of that, but who knows? I mean, they may just be turning around here and
responding to a question that people will have.
Yeah, and doing it in a way that maybe sort of deflects blame a little or clouds the picture. Who knows?
Yeah.
I do think it's good of them that they've provided these kinds of updates, and, you know, kudos to them for working with, you know, people like Chris Krebs, formerly of CISA, and Alex Stamos, formerly CISO of Facebook, and trying to, you know, clear this up investigate it to the fullest extent and figure out what's going on here. So, but this is a big development, and we'll see where it goes from there, because if it changes sort of, if it fundamentally changes what we know about this attack so far, and we come to learn that, oh, this wasn't really like a, this wasn't something that SolarWinds sort of, it's not entirely the fault of SolarWinds that, you know, these threat actors used other means to get inside the company and then get, you know, into the Orion development environment and poison those updates with the backdoor. If that's the case, then I think it significantly improves sort of the company's image in this, you know, in this whole equation. So, but we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see.
But yeah, in the meantime, we'll just be sort of handling these updates and these bits and pieces as they come in, and do our best to stay on top of it and make sense of it. So,
sure.
Which is not easy. Speaking of making sense of weighty topics, Alex,
yeah,
your experience with the dark web. So you spent a fair amount of time on this article. Do you want to start with your experiences, or do you want to start with sort of the summary of the article and sort of what the takeaway is?
I'll tell a story about how this article came to be and what it evolved into.
Go.
Okay. So, peeping behind the curtain a tiny, tiny, tiny bit, to acceptable levels, when I usually do these feature stories on search security, when I take a topic I'm interested in, or when someone has an idea and I go after it, it's usually about, it's a little over 1,000 words. This story is three times that. And the reason why it turned into that was, and it's actually funny based on how this story began, because I read a book by someone who I talked to in the story, Eileen Ormsby, who is an author and has been visiting / writing about / researching the dark web for 10 years since Silk Road started. And I thought the book was so interesting because when the dark web sort of entered public consciousness in like 2012, 2013, especially when Silk Road got shut down, there was definitely this image of the dark web. Like, everyone knew there was drugs. Everyone knew there was exploitation content. Everyone knew there was like stolen data, whatever. But then there was all this stuff about, like, the hitman sites, and there's all this stuff about red rooms, which are these, like, live stream torture things that aren't real, according to experts, right? And her book really broke down, like, here's what's real, here's what's not, here's the history behind some of these things, and has detailed stories about some of it, which it's a book I recommend. But I read that, and I was like, you know what? I don't know how this is going to become a story on search security, but I think there's something here. So I just started talking to people. And as I talked to people, which included Eileen and John Shire at Sophos and some other fine folks, I started to realize that there's actually a really interesting story about where the dark web is today. And then also whether enterprises need to be worried about the dark web, which became sort of the primary focus. And so the story just developed into the beast, the opus, as you've described it. And I go into a couple things, right? I introduce the dark web. I say, here's what the dark web is in reality. And the dark web is this collection of things called hidden services, which are basically websites, usually generally websites that require specialized web browsers to access, like Tor, which is a very reputable software.
Yes, created by the government. So, yeah.
Yeah, created in partnership with the government, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, the article, every reference of the dark web should be replaced by hidden services. But in practice, if you're trying to communicate ideas to people, everyone knows the dark web. Not everyone knows the term hidden services. So I walk down the, I sort of define, here's what the dark web is, which is different from the deep web. Described sort of onion sites. I talked about Tor. I mentioned how the dark web is actually good for sort of people, social activists who want to communicate within repressive regimes, or journalists who need to securely communicate with their sources. Either the journalists themselves are in such bad conditions, or the people they're communicating with are, etc., etc. And then I talk a lot about what you can and can't find. Eileen said during our interview, drugs, fraud, tons of child exploitation on the dark web. A lot of hoaxes. And then I go into the sort of malware stuff. I went into the security risks for enterprises, dark web monitoring services, and I can't talk about all of this. Like, you have to read the story, not just as an advertisement, but because if we did do a full discussion about every single aspect of this story, we'd be here another hour.
Go ahead.
Okay, and then just the last point, and this isn't really spoiling anything. It is a spoiler, but I'll still share it here. So many stories about cybersecurity, the conclusion is, make sure your stuff is patched. Make sure you're mature security wise. You have a good security posture. Do the basics, right? The multi-factor authentication, everywhere you can. Make sure you're monitoring 24/7.
Right.
Right. It's proactive monitoring tools were listed, and then continuous awareness training with your user base. So just like the conclusion of this 4,000 word story is there is some stuff on the dark web, but it's also stuff that can be found on the clear web, and just make sure you have your security basics in place.
It's a valuable conclusion. I mean, the thing that I thought was most interesting about the story was, with people like Shire and others sort of talking about how, a lot of the communication that goes on or that used to go on in these malicious cybercrime forums, hacker websites, a lot of that has sort of been moved to encrypted communications, moved offline from these hidden services because they're not really hidden. Because obviously law enforcement agents, threat researchers, the threat researchers you talk to, they use Tor, they go on to these websites, they do recon, they investigate, they go, quote unquote, undercover to collect intelligence and analyze what's going on there. They're not really hidden. So a lot of that activity has been moved to, whether it's Signal or Telegram or who knows. They're moving to things like Monero. I thought that was, that's been going on for a while now, this shift away from Bitcoin to Monero. Mm-hmm. But also the point about the stuff being found on the clear web, this. We've been covering this. Like, the ransomware sites now are not on the – they use dark web resources. Obviously, there's the NetWalker case that we just wrote about, the big DOJ bust where they were – they had a hidden resource, hidden service that I think the DOJ and Bulgarian authorities took down in conjunction that they were using to securely or covertly communicate with victims. But like Maze had multiple sites. Other ransomware groups had multiple sites on the clear web, on various domains. and they would shift and they would dump people's data. They would list victims. They would put out press releases, for God's sakes. I mean, so yeah, the shift between sort of what's on the dark web as being exclusive, it's not really, you know, that was fascinating. It's not really exclusive anymore. There's a lot of the stuff that just ends up on the clear web too. And a lot of the really juicy stuff, the communications and the, you know, some of the commerce too has been moved offline, not offline, like literally, but to, like I said, encrypted chats, comms, and not on these dark websites. So
yeah, the one interesting thing about the dark web is like, or the two interesting things, the focus on privacy, which allows more open criminality. That's everything. The same stuff is available on the quote unquote two webs, although it's really just one internet.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that it looks like it's out of a movie going on some of these like message boards.
But yeah, and you went to one of them. You went to, well, a few of them, but like you
I breached the dark web, bro.
Yeah. You were undercover.
I cracked into the mainframe myself.
No, but like the, what was it, White House Market?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about what you saw there, because I thought that was interesting. I mean, that's I think that's kind of like the vision that a lot of people have, whether they're, you know, just enterprise folks or just John Q. Public, about what's going on the dark web these days. Like you can just buy malware or buy ransomware or buy people's data. I mean, you obviously didn't check the veracity of those listings, but it's like, it's like shopping.
Yeah. I'll tell a little bit about what going on the dark web was like.
Sure.
It was very interesting and not as interesting as I was hoping. So this isn't really telling anyone how to do this, but it's not really a secret that Tor has become so good. Like, and it's like it's built into a browser now that you just download.
Yeah.
And it's just an address bar, and you just type in you set a couple settings, and then you're given an address bar, and you can just, if you find the .onion link, you can just put it in. Like, right. I got on White House Market from like no install of Tor to White House Market, 20 minutes maybe. Yeah. And it was easy and relatively painless. I used trusted sort of subreddits to make sure I wasn't going anywhere I wasn't supposed to. But I went to White House Market. White House Market is kind of, it has a little of everything. The rule of basically every single one of these stores is no large scale weapons and no exploitation materials.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, outside of the moral implications of that, like, you're just asking to get caught immediately.
Right, right.
Right? You're asking to become the number one target. yeah. So White House Market, they had all kinds of drugs, weed to heroin, and lots of stuff I hadn't even heard of before.
Sure, Alex. No, I'm just kidding.
Wink. Yeah. And White House Market, we should note, has a picture of Walter White as the mascot. Wearing that what's the hat called? He's dressed Heisenberg attire.
Yes, the Heisenberg hat there. I don't know what style of hat. I don't wear hats.
So. Yeah. So you got all the drugs, and then you got logins to like Disney Plus and Netflix. You got fulls, as in full sort of packages of personal identifiable information. Password logins, bank logins, PayPal logins, malware, ransomware for about $15, all of this in Monero. You know, very strong virus for $2, phishing packs, lots of stuff that like is probably junk, even if it is legitimate, and like probably most real companies have patched for. Like most big targets, not real companies, but most big targets have patched for already, or at least know how to avoid this stuff. And then there's some funny stuff, not funny stuff, but there's like Hungarian military issue bulletproof vests for $850.
Sure.
There's you could get a Krav Maga mega pack, which has ebooks and videos.
Yeah.
3D printed pistol, which I didn't even know existed.
Yep.
Brass, like a lot of stuff you would find in like your weird mall weapons kiosk, you could also find on the dark web too.
Yeah,
that's a kind of a decent overview of what I saw on that website.
So some security threats there, or at least, you know, listed as security threats, and some just sort of frivolous nonsense. The part that I thought was interesting, you know, in the article, at least in terms of feedback that you got from other people in the, you know, in the InfoSec community, was sort of this discussion about dark web monitoring and what does it really mean, and is it valuable, is it worth doing? And I've always come down on the sort of the side of the equation that, you know, dark web monitoring, like for you know, your average consumer, like, you know, we're going to track and make sure that your information doesn't end up on the dark web, you know, your social security, or like that stuff's kind of, I don't know how valuable it is, but there's a lot of intelligence, a lot of information that can be gathered from dark web recon in terms of analysts and, you know, technology monitoring that looks for hints that an attack may be in progress, or an attack may be planned, or that your organization may have been breached because there's data that's been spilled. Again, a lot of that data now can be found on the clear web, but that stuff can be sort of valuable in terms of predicting or stopping a potential attack, or at least alerting an organization to it. There have been numerous breaches in the past where that's been the case, where the stuff has turned up on, you know, various dark web marketplaces or websites, and the organization had no idea. But it seems like that's sort of a topic of discussion, that, you know, maybe organizations are better off just sort of doing the basics and protecting their credentials, protecting their accounts with multi-factor and shoring up their postures, rather than worrying about what goes on in the dark web. Is that sort of how the debate shaped up in your mind after talking with these folks?
Yeah, the dark web monitoring stuff's interesting because, I mean, you look at dark web monitoring, it in itself, it sounds like a marketing term, and it absolutely is, right?
Yeah.
Like that, it's the dark web is being used to market services. But dark web monitoring, sort of identity theft protection, scans, hidden services to see if data breach information shows up, personal information. I think Norton LifeLock talked about like 120 types of information, from everything like college degrees to healthcare data to even gamer tags. Mm. Yeah, so that stuff's kind of interesting. There were some actual good cases for it.
Mm.
Norton LifeLock does consumer and B2B2C, so employers can offer it as a benefit. And the sort of pitch there was like, have I been pwned is great, but have I been pwned does not get things immediately, and does not always get things when they show up in the news, and people would go to Have I Been Pwned to see if their stuff's on as part of a data breach.
Sure.
But the whole pitch for every single one of these services is set it and forget it, right? You don't have to go to Have I Been Pwned. It'll just sit in the background. And I'm pretty sure in every single case, it's not – dark web monitoring isn't really the thing you pay for. It's kind of – you pay for a platform or you pay for a service. And this seems like in a lot of cases, it's just one of the bullet points.
Yeah, it's one of the things that'll show up in your dashboard. Yeah.
Right, as in here's a thing. I thought it was interesting, the CrowdStrike one. I was talking to Adam Myers, CrowdStrike Senior Vice President of Intelligence, and he was talking about Falcon X Recon, And he was sort of openly saying, like, dark web's a marketing term. We don't really use dark web as, like, part... Like, it's used in the terms of goes beyond the dark web is kind of their sort of marketing pitch for it. But it's not really in the title. It's not really at the forefront outside of that tagline.
Yeah.
And it basically it's stuff is available off the dark web too. The dark web should be paid attention to because that's where a lot of breach data shows up and you see a lot more open criminality, but it's just one piece of the puzzle. So I think it makes sense. Dark web monitoring, identity, hidden service, identity theft protection, sort of, if you want to take the marketing sort of sting out of it. When you look at it as set it and forget it, there's verification in place by people at these companies, which I'm not saying Have I Been Pwned doesn't have that,
right?
But I'm saying like it's also built in, just sort of, and also part of a larger protection and larger security platform that you're probably paying for as a SaaS or whatever. That was actually kind of interesting to me. Like, okay, yes, there's definitely marketing buzzword at play, but there's also functional use behind that marketing term.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment of that. I mean, I think a lot of people tend to agree. A lot of experienced InfoSec folk that I've talked to over the years kind of have espoused what Myers has said, which is, you know, it's become a kind of an overused term, and it's kind of become like a, you know, for the general public, like an internet boogeyman. And, you know, there's probably some use for that in communicating potential risks and threats to, you know, your average person that doesn't know a lot about tech. But it seems like the more technically proficient, the more InfoSec knowledgeable folks are sort of less apt to use the term and move away from it, in part because it's become that kind of term, and in part because, to your point in the article, that which is one of the big takeaways, is that this stuff has moved beyond, you know, the quote unquote dark web, the dark net marketplaces, and it's on the clear web, and it's on, you know, encrypted channels. So
So, and then to answer your question formally, like what you were actually asking, I think, yeah, like security posture is number one.
Yeah.
Make sure you're staying patched, doing 2FA, all that other stuff is the feedback that I generally got. And the dark web is like, yes, you should technically pay attention to it.
Yes.
But like, it shouldn't keep you up at night any more than anything else.
Yeah.
Like it's one thing to watch in the long list of stuff you need to watch.
Yeah, I think that is a good assessment of what is in that, you know, very large, very in-depth 3,000 plus word story that you wrote. And I encourage, you know, we've only touched on it. I encourage everyone out there to read it, but it gives people I think a strong sense of what's changed about the dark web, what still goes on there, and what, you know, if you're an enterprise, what you really need to be concerned with, how to address it. So,
And then just, I know we're about to cap off, but a couple, I wanted to save a couple interesting observations that didn't go in the story
from my time
on the dark web.
Yes. The deleted scenes. I was going to ask about this. I'm glad you reminded me. Go.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of stuff that like wouldn't fit in an enterprise cybersecurity website, but I think would be interesting in a casual conversation setting. So one thing I was worried about before going into the dark web was that I don't want to see any like exploitation stuff.
Yeah,
like right. I don't want to stumble on any of that.
Yep.
I don't want to be concern. Given any of that. Like I like. And in fact, I wouldn't have went on if I thought that would be a real risk. But thanks to Reddit and some other places, if you stay on the path of established marketplaces and established forums like Dread, which is kind of like the dark web sort of take on Reddit. Definitely not the same ownership. And then, like, there's versions of New York Times. There's sort of social progress websites. There's a lot of safe sites on the dark web, too. So as long as you, like, go to established places, it's actually very difficult, I think, as long as you don't go looking for it, to accidentally stumble on it. Because no site's interested in becoming target number one.
Right, yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. I did... The only thing was, I wanted to go off the beaten path slightly, because I knew I went on the very established websites, but I wanted to see, like... I wanted to see listings of other less reputable stuff, so I went on a couple search engines, saw some stuff I didn't like, logged off with a very negative feeling about humanity for a little bit. I'm going to leave it at that for the purposes of this podcast, but
sure.
Eileen sent me a couple links to some interesting places that, like, obviously I wouldn't find easily on any of the reputable sort of dark web onion link curation. There were two. One, she showed me an example of a Red Room scam where it's like there's a timer. There was a timer that didn't work.
Yeah.
There was an option to pay for a previous video, which I don't even know what it would have given me.
Right.
And just, it was a bunch of, and it was a little bit of like, this is the Red Room type stuff. Like red background, dark text. And then she also sent me sort of like Hitman websites a little bit, some of the fake ones.
Oh, yeah. Got to get the Hitman in there.
And there was a message board on one of them where some people were asking some very dumb questions. But for the purposes of this podcast, I don't think I should necessarily touch on them.
Yeah, maybe not go into criminal enterprise and dumb, you know, would be criminal questions.
But it was interesting to see the scam sort of play out and like what they were charging and like dumb stuff like that. But the last thing I want to touch on is when it comes to these dark places on the dark web, either fake or real, the aesthetic and like the low grade art design that comes on a lot of these logos, not White House Market or Monopoly Market, which both use ripoffs of sort of IP. But there's a very like, do you remember the site Rotten?
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely that kind of imagery is just all over the lower grade websites on the dark web. It has a very early internet feeling, which is very appropriate because everything loads so slowly.
Yeah.
But anyways, there is some junk on the dark web, but I guess I do not recommend anyone go on the dark web. But the only thing I will say as like advice to anyone who's gonna go regardless of what they tell them, even though I do not recommend it, make sure you go to places where you know you can trust the links, where you have multiple reputable sources, and do not go far off the beaten path, and you should be fine. Also, don't buy anything on these marketplaces, right? Like, I'm not going to say any more than that. Just be smart.
Just be smart. Yeah. No, I think that pretty much sums it up. You know,
yeah.
Be smart. Do not buy. I'm glad that you did not run into anything too nefarious on there and stuck to quote unquote established or more well-known stuff, familiar stuff on there. You did good work on this story.
Thanks, Rob.
It turned out really well, and hopefully it's helpful to people that aren't as familiar with what goes on in the dark web, and helps them sort of prioritize that component of their InfoSec posture. So
yeah, my pitch for this story, my two sentence pitch is, if you want to hear the enterprise stuff, it's there.
Yeah.
If you want to hear some of the like the interesting non-enterprise stuff, it's also there.
Yeah.
Which is a cool thing. For something I think is pretty cool about this article.
Yeah, it's educational on a number of levels.
Thank you.
So
thanks.
Well, Alex, I appreciate the deep dive into the innards of the dark web. And yes. Your work on that article. Again, I encourage everybody to check it out. And thank you for taking time to chat with me about it on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.